from down under.
Do or do not. There is no try.
G'day, mate. How you going?
All right, folks. Welcome to the one, the only Fanther from down under.
G'day, mate. How are you? This is Adam.
And joining us all the way from the United States of America is the one, the only co-host of one of the most amazing shows when it comes to Star Wars literature and Star Wars in general. Part of the Star Wars Report, it is Star Wars Beyond the Films co-host, Mark Herleman. Buddy, how are you?
Oh, I am doing phenomenal, man. If you're not having fun, you're working too hard, and I refuse to work too hard.
No worries. And just off air, we're just talking about the success of some great films that are going out there right now. Now, one which, unfortunately, I fell asleep in the other day here in Australia because I'd worked about 13 hours straight. And they said, mate, come and see that Endgame movie. I said, did you mean the Highlander Endgame? No, not that one, mate, the other one. And I went, okay, I've got to see this because I figured they'd do something smart and get Arnold Schwarzenegger in there to take over from Tony Stark and go, no, come on, Thanos, got you now.
You fell asleep?
Yeah, I did. Serious.
That's rough. Anytime you work 12 hours or more, you don't realize how much of a toll that takes, especially when you've been going nonstop during that time. Then you sit down and you're just like, oh. I remember my recliner was the devil. If I sat in that thing for more than 5 minutes, I was out. It didn't matter if I had something on TV that I needed to watch or not. I was like, as soon as I put my legs up.
I fell asleep when, I won't spoil it, obviously, folks, but there is a Professor Banner in there, and I was taken away by just how genius this guy. I mean, he's always genius, obviously, but yeah, just that scene alone, and then all of a sudden I was out. And I didn't wake up until Tony goes, I am Iron Spider-Man Superman.
See, and when I worked at the theater, we would preview late after I was done doing all the janitorial work. And it was like 2, 3 in the morning sometimes. I fell asleep through Superman versus Batman, the Harry Potter movies. I was like, oh, God, no. Deadpool. There's so many good movies that I just was like, oh, my gosh. As my feet got up on that chair in front of me, I was doomed. Just doomed to snore.
It happens, man. I mean, it's natural. We're all only able to stay up for so long, I think, these days, and there's only so many movies that will, even this is an exciting movie, don't get me wrong, but I need to, I think, just wait till the crowds die down, have quite a bit of coffee, go in and just watch it straight for the 3 hours.
Yeah. I think when it comes to the crowds, you've got to be willing to sit up front, I think. Mm-hmm. When I go, that tends to be what happens is, it doesn't matter what time we get there. Usually you go in there and it's just like, wow, password puzzle in here. There's like maybe 2 seats open. But you get to that front row and it's like, bam, there's rows of the seats. So we end up sitting, if we can, in the last of the front rows or, anywhere in that section. And granted, you are looking up like this. Which I think of that experience, the only movie I've ever watched with that breakneck, because I was in the very front row with my dad watching The Hunt for Great October, or Hunt for Red October. Dude, them subs coming out on that thing, like, oh my God, it felt real. But you can't get the same kind of experience with your regular type of films, because when you have that person there on the screen, you're like, oh my God, they're massive. But if you can get to that mindset where it's not the end of the world, you can find a place to get comfortable without falling asleep. That's probably the only way you can really do those early, early showings where there's everybody and their dog and you're just like, oh my God, I hope you wore deodorant because, whoo, man, you are on me today.
Red October. I actually remember seeing that in the cinemas. We saw it in the drive-in and that was great enough because you had those massive steel speakers that used to sit on your window and you'd crank them up, a little AM speaker basically. And my old man would go, listen to this, Adam, you're going to love this. Wait. And then you hear Sean in those scenes where he goes, give us your ping, Lieutenant. Give us your ping now, please. And he hears, boop, boop. And then I'm starting, I'm a kid, I've just had school all day. I'm like, oh, yeah, Dad's really good, eh? And then I started dozing off a bit, and the submarines are crashing. He goes, you just did a crazy Ivan, Shaggy.
Such a good movie.
That's
man.
Great movie.
I keep thinking when I go to those type of movies and I'm going on the early one, first day showing and stuff, you're not expected to be people. I mean, oh, yeah. I live in a small town where you don't have to actually pre-order your tickets. There will still be some tickets. But even then, on the third showing, I'm sitting there and, you know, I'm bumping into the guys I used to work with. And they're like, yeah, man, it's so packed. We actually opened two more theaters. So, I mean, it did, even in my small town, it did sell out all four of the first showings. So they ended up having six altogether. But, yeah, I mean, it's that aspect of you got to be close. So if you're going to go and you're going to do that, pick a theater that has wide seats.
Oh, because yes.
That's the thing. I mean, I was sitting there with the guy next to me, and like, I claimed dominance right away because when I sat down, there was nobody sitting next to me. So it was like, you know, I've got my elbows on the spot. And then halfway through the movie, I noticed, you know, that his elbow's like kind of coming up behind my elbow. Like, he's like trying to do that quick, like, I got this armrest now, fool. You're out of here. And I was like, oh, really, buddy? So I'm kind of watching out the side of my eye. And as soon as he like leaned over to give his girlfriend a kiss, I just put my arm back in there, like, oh, yeah, old miss. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you're going to be uncomfortable because that's the price of going to see it early. Now, is that trade-off worth it to be non-spoilered? I mean, this is a definite new era of media when it comes to the social media giants of Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. The way that we can reach from, you know, one end of the globe to the other like we're doing right now is so much easier than it ever was before that – you got little D-bags out there, you know, boys, girls, trolls. It don't matter. I mean, my kids at school are sharing me a picture of one of the kids at school Snapchat. It's like, ah, I hated this movie, blah, 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 blah. Massive spoilers. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah, public post. Did it to their school page. So everybody in the school that saw that got totally spoiled. It's like, man, there are just people out there that are just unhappy with life and they only get thrills by hurting other people and just causing muck. Doesn't matter how bad the muck is, as long as they're flinging it some direction and it's not landing on them, they're like, and, you know, that's the danger of this era. So you got to judge that. You got to weigh that. Like, do you want to let little Johnny D-bag over there spoil a bunch of stuff for you? Or are you going to want to go in and see it? And then it comes down to, you know, how well do you put on your expectations for movies? I mean, me, I'm the type, like, If I'm gonna be shocked and surprised by something, I want it to be during that moment. I don't want to lose that suspense. But at the same time, you take me to a movie with my wife, right? Like, if it's an emotional impact, you get me on that second time where she hasn't watched it, and I'm like watching it, watching her, and thinking about what's going on with the character. I'm like, by the time it happens, I'm like, ah, I'm like, this is great writing. I mean, it probably isn't, but I'm so in that moment that I'm just, yeah, it's. It's a lot of fun. So, I mean, that's, you got to weigh this kind of stuff, man. And then plus, it's also who you go with. Sometimes that can ruin your time, man. You go with somebody that can't shut up and you're like, dude, can't we just enjoy the movie, talk about it afterwards? Come on, please.
It's so true. I mean, I think the thing is they get so engulfed in what they're doing. You know what I mean? The biggest spoiler is, folks, I'm going to have to say it because this is a Star Wars podcast, not a Marvel one. The one that comes to save the day is the one, the only, Christoph Waltz. He comes in at the end and saves all the characters.
All of the little characters.
No, folks, that's not true. He's not in the movie, but he wishes he was. But I tell you what, something else happened this week. I got the audiobook of the new Claudia Gray novel. Now, I've got to say, Claudia Gray, really, for me, I think brings us back to that EU feeling, the Legends writing. She really... she's got that knack for writing. I mean, she's in amongst all the greats for me, like Timothy Zahn, Kevin J. Anderson, all those, Jude Watson, every of them. And
we started a new hashtag for her. Claudia Gray is the new Timothy Zahn.
She really is. Yes, it's true. It's true. Like, honestly, she has the feeling of the eras that she writes in. Now, Master and Apprentice released, obviously, in the last fortnight. Master and Apprentice is a Phantom Menace prequel 6 years prior. Fantastic story, of obviously, about Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon Jinn. Qui-Gon Jinn, yeah, that's right. Qui-Gon, and what he really does in this is, I think, as a character, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, we start to see that rift grow further, as obviously he's getting a chance to actually hand off Obi-Wan back to another master so he can join the council. So we actually start to see some of that rift that grows into the Phantom Menace. But we also start to see some of his early years with Dooku after he had his first apprentice, Rael Abaros. Now, here's the big one, folks, is that apparently Claudia Gray has said that she had in mind Benjamin Bratt for that character while she was writing the novel, which I think's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. No, and I want to say she said similar about other characters, not about Brat, but having other characters in mind, which some of the best writers, that's going in, they've got those type of plans, which is great. But, you know, the way she captures not just the background of whatever planet she's on, but the way the characters are interacting with things and the presence of the characters. I mean, I've complained off and on about stories that bounce back and forth between the past and in the present. And she does that, but she doesn't do it in a way that upsets me at all. It doesn't bother me because it's not like you're getting a complete past story. It's like you're getting glimpses of their truth, you know, their past, but you don't have to have it all because you're just getting a milestone here. We'll come back maybe to that moment in time for a little bit, and then we'll jump forward like a couple mm-hmm. months or a year or so. But, you know, I mean, that for me, one of the things I really dug the most was the way she changed up the direction of the relationship between Kenobi and Jin. I mean, I'm a big fan of Jude Watson's book series and the way that their relationship, it started out kind of like what we get in this book, but only when Qui-Gon first picked up Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan is like almost 13. He's almost at the age where a Padawan couldn't even be picked out anymore.
Yeah.
So when he gets picked up, there's that feeling of insecurity, this feeling of I don't measure up as a Padawan and who would pick me? Whereas in this one, we pick up and he's almost 18, he's 17. Jin gets the invitation, like you said, but they're never quite Anakin and Obi-Wan. You know, we were brothers, the two wheels working, or better yet, an hour hand and a minute's hand on a clock. You know, I mean, they're not working that mechanical yet. They definitely feel like there's this block between them. And what's great is the way she gets into Jin's head because, you know, he's got this invitation, but he's still like, well, I'm failing Obi-Wan. You know, it's not just that Obi-Wan's failing me. He's a good Padawan. I'm failing him. And the other interesting dynamic there is that unlike with Watson's books, Jin didn't have an extra Padawan before he took on Obi-Wan. It was Dooku, which is a great change because I wasn't expecting that. When we get the introduction of Rael's character, Dooku and Jin are fighting in a war. And I was like, I had to hit the brakes. I'm like, whoa, wait, the Jedi are at war before the I mean, that for me was a major change from what we had in Legends. I mean, Legends, we get to that. And in the Jude Watson series, we see a lot of the failing of the Republic's democracy and of the Senate and the way that they would bound the Jedi's hands. But now we're finding out that the Council was okay with sending the Jedi to war even back then for other types of principles. And then as the story's playing out, you get this constant, you know, butting of heads that you know already happens with Jin when we see, well, he's the chosen one, you know. And Yoda doesn't get along with that in episode one. And we find out more about there's this backstory between those two and how when it comes to Jin getting elected, it's Yoda that's like, mistake this is, but go with the council, I will. Like, you know, just like not at all afraid to just be like, told you so I did, but made a decision, we must go forward now. You're just like, Yoda's like more than happy to let the ship sink and be like, told you we'd do, you don't know what you're doing. But, you know, go forward with that, and I'm just like, holy crap, this relationship between Jin and them and the way that Jin's looking at things and the way he's looking at prophecy and the mysticism. It all comes to a head towards the end of the book, though, when they start dealing with the slavery issue.
Yes.
And, you know, what do the Jedi do? What authority do the Jedi have? What should we do? And I knew that moment was coming when the character Rahara ends up getting recaptured, basically. She was an escaped slave, and she's against Zerka Corporation, and there's a moment to kind of jab them back and help some other slaves. And she goes in and ends up getting to a point where one of the droids of Zerka Corp, they do a face scan on her and they recognize her and they're like, oh, you're coming with us. And Jin's talking to the, you know, the political government and they're like, wait, are you talking about a former slave? Because there's really no such thing as a former slave. And the realities of the way slavery is okay in the Republic, even though it's abandoned, the way that the legal ease of it all allows it to happen. You know, the way that that all comes front between Jin and the council and everything, that I think was probably one of the deepest moments of the entire book, besides the when we get to the moment where we see Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon kind of finally figure it out and they have that sense of, oh, we do make a good team, and they start picking up on things. I mean, those moments and the way that she, you know, illustrates that throughout the story and gets us to those moments, it's just so beautifully done that by the time you get there, you have just such a great appreciation for their relationship. And I was honestly surprised because, like I said, Jude Watson did the same thing over like 10 books.
Oh, she did. You know,
Obi-Wan being 13 to 17. And here comes Claudia Gray, which is one book, and it's not even a big window of time. And she's still able to deliver on that in a way that feels logical in the progression of the way the story plays out.
I 100% agree. I just think we are missing one thing. And Claudia, I have to say this, if you're listening to this podcast, not that you would, but if you do, I'm glad you do. But there is one thing you did miss. You missed a scene, and it's in between where he's looking at the prophecies. You know, Obi-Wan's got, Master, are you looking at the prophecies? Yes, Obi-Wan. I'm looking at the Chosen One prophecy. And you can see them, you know, they're in their little, you know, hovel, doing their flicking through the books, you know. This is so interesting. The One is the One, because he's a hero of the One. And you can just imagine a dreadlocked Jedi go, hey, Obi-Wan, man, what are you doing? Oh, dude. What books? That again, Qui-Gon? Come on. Try to study you. This is crazy. Whoa, I'm going to have to get Death Sticks, man. Hell with this. Qui-Gon Jinn.
You're right. There were a couple moments where she could have easily slipped in some connections to Voss.
The Voss and
Bran. Yes. Voss had Bran, which was the Mon Cal character. Obi-Wan had a small cadre of characters. I think Galvin was one of them too, or Gavin or something like that, which was great because in the later series that Jude Watson came into, when Kenobi went back and saw, I think it was the Gavin or Galvin character, he had like aged like 30 years overnight because of the way the Force, you know, when all the Jedi had died, stuff, the way it hit him and the way he took it was just so different. But yeah, I kept wondering if we were going to get like any kind of reference or even to Satine. You know, because that was another thing that Jude Watson's series had done. Kenobi almost walked away and almost dated a chick. Like, those were two things that happened in that book. So when the Clone Wars was like, oh, and then there's Satine. I was like, a third? We already got a book. We got, oh my gosh, a three? Kenobi, keep it in your trousers. Oh my God. So I was waiting for like that kind of a reference too. And that's another one. You know, speaking of trousers, the way Rail. When Jin walks in on Rail when he's having his little tryst, I'm like, oh my God. I'm so shocked that Jin isn't calling. Because Jin seems like such a by the book at first, you know?
Yeah.
And then you start realizing how much sidestepping the rules he goes to. And it's only as you realize it through Kenobi, who's all like, why are you sidestepping? You skipped step 6 and 7 here. Come on. And then you start realizing, okay, this is not as by the books, but compared to Rail?
Oh yeah,
he's a straight A student.
He really is. I mean, we didn't have it on the council there. Something that I remember back in the God, Crocky, when we first got the figures from Phantom Menace coming out, and we looked at some of these characters. It was Syrian Jedi, and we Ki Adi Mundi, and I remember my brother even saying, "Yeah, Ki Muddy Undies." but you know, I always figured he would have been great if he had been voiced by a British gangster. You know, hey, can I be coming, mate? You go down and make sure you get it all for a short hour, eh? For you make sure, yeah.
See, now, I'm not a timeliner, but I have heard a lot of people complaining on the timeline side of things that certain ages were shifted. I've heard that Jin has now been reduced in age by 10 years, that he's 10 years younger. Mm. There's question now if Depa was now her age has changed. Because, like, someone tracked it down and they're like, well, if for her to be on the council the way she is, that would actually make her the youngest. I was like, what? Like, blow my head kind of stuff where I'm not, like, too hung up on that. But there were some people that were like, you know, the timeline on that doesn't match up. But I think one thing that struck me as odd was Chancellor Raj or whatever. Because it doesn't feel right out the gate that you're 6 years from the Phantom Menace. You know, there's nothing really that sets that in stone. So immediately I'm like, really? Another chancellor? Like, this seems to be like a theme. What do we got? We got the Queen of Naboo. No, we got three other queens before. Then we see this other queen in the Clone Wars. Nope, there's three other queens between that and there in the books. Oh, it's Boss Nos now. We got three other bosses before this boss that you see. Like really? We just shoehorn kings and queens into every place that's got these type of things. And now we're doing the chancellors. And I mean, it does serve the story, but again, if I would have known more about that 6 year period, because I kept, when I first started, I was thinking it was much closer because, you know, he's only 17. Yeah. I'm like, so that, I feel like that was a change because I thought when episode 1 came out, Obi-Wan was like 19 at that time. Now that would put him closer to like 22.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it does. If you are paying attention to those kind of things, it does make you stop and scratch your head. And I don't think that that necessarily is on the fault of Claudia Grace. I think that that's the approach that Del Rey's taking right now.
Yes.
They've been very loose when it comes to locking themselves in with stuff. They come with that approach of like, well, it makes it easier. I disagree. I think that that creates problems down the road. But I think that because they've gone that direction, I mean, we've got a very small, loose timeline, nothing like what we used to have at the front of the books. We have no character dramatists. I miss that like nobody's business. You know, I used to come back to books sometimes that I hadn't read in like a week and a half and be like, oh, who's that one character? And I flipped the part. Oh, yeah, that's Barbell. Okay, yeah, I remember that character now. Get back in the story and away I go. No, now I'm like sitting there like, who is that? I'm trying to flip back, trying to find their introduction and reread it. And that gets a little frustrating. But no, that idea of not locking the books down seems odd. And I think that sometimes with some people, especially them timeliners, man, they're the ones that really notice that stuff fast, then it's causing issues for them, which is causing them to point out these things. And, you know, I've said this before, Legends was not a lot of issues. It was a lot of small things that contradicted each other that caused bigger issues down the road. We're going to have that same issue if they don't start locking things in, you know. Eventually, you're going to have to pull the plug. No, Luke can't be in five places. He's over on Atu right now. He can't be over there on Krayt at the same moment. Like, I don't know. There's some things that got to do. Well, I mean, I guess we have seen him do force projection, so he could be at other places, but that would kill him, right?
Well, this is it. The other thing, too, you got to look at is, you know, and the biggest mystery in Phantom Menace is, what was Yoda doing with Yaddle? I mean, at the end of the day, that's what you got to really ask yourself. Yes, married we did. Many kids. But you never see it. No,
really, that is something that jumps out. I mean, they never give us Yoda or Yaddle species. In fact, Yoda was the only one, aside from video games. You know, we get to the KOTOR, and then there's, like, Yandar and other ones that show up. But aside from going in the past, there was no other Jedi. And then all of a sudden, Luke gave us Yaddle. And I think a lot of people were like, your species is so rare, we don't know what the name of it is. Or you guys were so stupid, you don't even know the name of your own race. We're just like, I don't know. And then, yeah, so, I mean, either way, like, it's a racist. Not well known. You would think like you go out of your ways to try to find some way to reproduce. Maybe there's a bigger story there. Maybe Yaddle's sterile. Maybe Yoda's. Maybe the whole species was like bombed by some Sith planet or something, and they can live for a really long age, but they can't reproduce. So like, it, I mean, that would be a hell of a story when you think about it. I mean, destined to live 2,000 years and watch your race die off one at a time because you can't reproduce anymore because the Sith hosed you over for something you did to them some time ago. I mean, that would be a kind of a cool story. And another thing Claudia Gray does is, like, she drops little hints. Like, there's a Darth Rend that she dropped in there. She talked about the Sith and stuff. When she was talking about the old holocrons of prophecy and things like that, I mean, they referenced quite a few things that were pretty exciting. I was like, ooh, I want to know more about this. You know, get you excited for the possibility of what those trilogies by the Game of Thrones people are going to do. I mean, there's a lot of people that are like, oh, they're really good at medieval stuff. It's got to be a back in the Old Republic. I'm one of them, I admit. Like, I think it's a no-brainer. Stick them in the Old Republic. They're going to rock it. But who better to play with than the Sith?
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, the ultimate narrator to a Yoda movie would be Yoda himself. You can imagine him doing the trailer, too. He goes, for 900 years, he has waited. Waited he has. Revenge he will not have.
I remember seeing that picture of the young... almost looked like a Yuuzhan Vong version of Yoda, where he had, like, dreads, and it's all going back, and he's got his hands kind of like Sonic the Hedgehog all up around his armpits. And I was like, you know, I'd be down for that story.
Oh,
you know,
hell yes. And
think about back in Legends, you know, when Luke found the Chunthor, right? The Jedi big cruiser ship that was basically a floating academy that would go around from galaxy to galaxy, picking up new kids, any profitable Jedi, and they would start training them on that. They would go around. I mean, it was like the next generation, but it was with Jedi, basically. And then they get to Dathomir, and they crash land on the planet. Yoda's got to go and negotiate. I mean, like, yeah, I was always hoping to see more of a younger Yoda. And I think, you know, the relationship that Jyn has with Yoda, or not even really a relationship, it's more like the way Jyn feels Yoda feels about him, has me interested to know what put Yoda in that frame of mind. You know, I mean, you see certain people in life that the older they get, you know, certain things just leave them in a really negative zone, right? My grandpa was, my grandpa that passed away, that is, was extremely racist. And I had no clue of this growing up. I grew up on the same property with him for the longest time. So I had no idea, right? I was just, grandpa was just grandpa. They talked and they said really bad jokes and all sorts of stuff. And there's a story about when my grandpa went to pick up a hitchhiker, right? And it was an African-American gentleman. My grandpa thought he was doing this great civic duty, right? And so he goes and picks the guy up and he takes him down and he goes through Sheridan into Willamina, which where grandpa heads to on his way home. And my grandpa always stops at a bar because my grandpa was a raging alcoholic, you know, racist alcoholic. Goes together hand in hand. Great story, right? So my grandpa goes to the bar and he tells the guy, you know, hey, I'm going to stop in here, get a drink real quick. We'll come back. I'll take you wherever you need to go. Well, my grandpa's in the bar. He's watching the news. It turns out the guy's an escaped convict. So this doesn't help my grandpa's outlook because now he's just like, they're all escaped convicts. It's like, no. But there's just certain people that their twisted point of view gets supported by the things in their life or the lack of people confronting that. And they grow up to be super old. And like, I mean, it would be interesting to see what makes Yoda tick. That is definitely a story that I think people would be interested in. I dare say if you were to take that story and if you were to put it in with where they put Solo in that same short amount of time, I think you wouldn't have had the same issue because people would have been more curious about a young Yoda than they were about Harrison Ford, a character that at that time they already knew he is already dead. Mm. I mean, I think that that could have been something that they could have played with and definitely got a lot more clicks on because everybody loves Yoda.
Everyone does. And it's a mystery thing that even, I mean, we know back in 2012 when it first got taken over is the fact that they were definitely on the table as something to do with Yoda. I think it was quickly dismayed or put aside because it's one of those things. Lucas has never really wanted to delve into that, I think, because they've never been able to come up with a satisfying way to get that mystery across, you know, or you know what makes him so good. I mean, Yoda's great, but he's no Anakin Skywalker when it comes to, you know, the amount of force or dare we say midichlorians. But you know, look, it's at the end of the day, it's about the potential of that character. He is the ultimate of that era of Jedi, you know, as far as their knowledge. But of course, it goes hand in hand, as we know in the story, the tragedy of all of that is that they were very blinded by their faith.
Yep.
And that's the motto of the prequel trilogy. I mean,
that was a big thing between Jin and Kenobi was, how can we do what we do and stay within our mandate?
Mm-hmm. Prime directive.
Yeah.
It really is.
Which when it comes to the Rahara storyline, that's when I really got interested as to where the faults with the Jedi came. I can't wait to get that... that was it, Jedi Dooku or whatever the audio book is.
Jedi Lost.
Just came out, just got released like 2 days ago. I look forward to hearing more about that because think about this, right? Dooku, even in canon, he's still part of the Lost 20.
Yeah.
The Lost 20 were Jedi Knights that left the Order for higher ideals, right? Higher ideals. Not because they had lesser ideals, because they thought even higher than the standards the Jedi placed on themselves. And so Qui-Gon left like that. I want to know more about what pushed him there. I mean, you know, in Legends, we found out that it was Sidious and him, you know, getting twisted up in that and the fall of Sifo Dyas and all that. But now, like, and everything I'm hearing, it sounds like this audio drama is definitely where we see the final straw that breaks his back. Whereas Legends always made it kind of seem like it was Jin's death, and that's when he left. Whereas right now, we found out he's already gone. He's already left the Orders, which is another definite change from what we had before.
Yeah, he's chilling out on a casino in Sereno, you know, just knocking back, Chardonnay, well, you look just, yes, there's some ballet happening over here, and you have an orchestra over here, and yes. It's very classical, of course.
See, he found a love for the halfling's weed, that's the problem.
But I think that's where it comes down to at the end of the day. It's going to make a bit more drama if they split that up a bit and show the breakdown of this character, right? I can't wait. Now, I mean, that's the first thing I'm going to be downloading next is straight onto the old iPod is, of course, that audio book. And I'm glad that they're finally doing it. They're finally doing what we all talked about, God, 2 or 3 years ago. Clone Wars gets riled up. And they straight away said, yes, we're not doing any more Clone Wars. You've got all these talented voice actors. I mean, they're not just people that work on audiobooks. and they're finally now freed up to come and do what Doctor Who and other British programs have been doing for years on Big Finish over in the UK. They just continue these characters through audiobooks, and I guarantee you the amount of people that listen to those is going to make them gazillions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. No, especially that throughput. You know, now you're sitting there and you're listening to that character. I mean, when they did that for the Ahsoka novel, when they had Ashley Eckstein do the narration, I mean, that was huge. You know, what I would love to have, though, is something where we have Mark Thompson doing all the narration and then just having the characters speaking the character lines. I mean, that's going to be a tremendous amount more editing and all that than what you got going on right now. But I think the overall production would just be so great. I'm looking forward to reading that one as it is. It'll be a good one, man. Just real good.
Oh, yeah. And I think at the end of the day, they can actually do a lot of that on Skype now or any of those. You know, they don't need to go into the studio. I mean, literally, you've got a script, but you just say the lines directed to you. You know, there's only so many lines each character's going to have in each of these productions. So no matter how they react and stuff like that, I think, you know, it's just going to be amazing. And the amount of people they can pull in, but they don't have the CGI to worry about. They don't have all that physical stuff to actually worry about. I think it's going to be making it a lot more coming our way.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
What's the other one, too? Did you see they had a preview for an upcoming Claudia Gray book, but they dropped the synopsis for a Kylo Ren story is coming. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's what? Right.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Got me all excited there. I mean, you know, we've been hoping and figuring that once episode 9 came out, we were going to get that backstory on Kylo, Luke, the fall of his order. And for me, the most important thing, the conversation between Luke, Han, and Leia about what happened with Ben. I mean, I think that right there is my biggest question and part of my biggest hang up with episode 8 is that we have nothing there. And then when Luke and Leia do meet up, it's like none of that's ever mentioned. It's like, I've missed you so much that it doesn't matter, all this other stuff. And I want to know what that conversation was, because I really truly feel like they blamed Luke. Like I want to say whether they meant to say it or not. I feel like there was that moment where Han had with Chewie where he was like, "You left him," you know, and you know, rest in peace to Peter Mayhew too. We just found out today that he passed away on the 30th. Like that's really sad. But I mean, I think that we're going to get something like that where there was this moment where Han and Leia blame Luke. Like, we didn't want you to take him in the first place, and then not only did you screw it up, we lost our son to the damn dark side. Like and that added guilt. To me, that's what broke Luke. And granted, that's all in my head right now. You know, that's just my way of trying to process this and come up with stuff to make what I saw on the film make more sense for me. Because for me, I think, you know, just him reaching for the lightsaber and then his nephew waking up and getting a titty fit and just ripping everything apart, that doesn't play well. Now, having his sister and his brother-in-law rip into him for it all and be like, "We never wanted you to have him in the first place." That's deep, man. That's some sting. I mean, and I keep going back to, you know, we get to Vector Prime in Legends, and when Anakin turns the ship and leaves Chewie behind, and the planet crashes on him, and when Han comes in and he flat out says, you left him behind. You know, that the way that that impacted Anakin, I feel like there's got to be something like that to happen to Luke. So, to get a story with Kylo Ren and the promise that, you know, I say promise very loosely, they haven't promised us anything, but the idea that they could go back to that moment and have that either be a flashpoint or even have the start of the story. You know, you watch that happen and then you watch where he goes from there. Either way you go about it, I can't wait to find out more about the character. Because that, for me, Kylo Ren and Rey are definitely the two characters that I'm the most curious about, the characters I've enjoyed the most with the sequel trilogy. Then comes Poe and then comes Finn. So, I mean, you know, the second tier cast for me has been the first class all the way around. And for me, the people that would have been my first class, the big three, have been just, I have not been thrilled with what we've got. You know, I'm one of those like Hamill when he shared that picture of all of them on there, what could have been. Granted, yeah, I've got that in Legends, but I've read all the Legends. There's nothing new aside from a comic that came out yesterday and one coming out at the end of the month. There's nothing new for me, which sucks. I mean, there's lots of canon stuff, but again, you know, I mean, I named my daughter Jaina, so I mean, I want both universes. And the fact that Marvel can pull this off and produce a TV show, you know, an MCU that we're not arguing like, "Oh, it's not canon." Well, of course it's not canon. The comic books were canon. This is different. This is an alternate universe. You know, I'm starting to say that with Legends. I'm not calling it Legends anymore. I'm going to start calling it the Legends Universe, because people need to realize it's not just – Legends sounds like such a quick pass-off. It does. Legends, man.
It's disrespectful.
You know, like the legend of this, the legend of that. Mm-hmm. No, Legends is a title in this case. It's just the Legends Universe, a universe of stories. Great stories.
Oh, they really are. And the thing is, it's something that will happen with this canon soon. You know, it'll happen in the next few years where it gets itself all tied up. And it doesn't go with a director's vision. And they'll finally go, well, we're going to... It'll get to those different tiers of canon that Lucas had years ago. This is your Clone Wars canon.
It's already there loosely.
It is.
Like, they've pushed things there where they're like, well, the book came out a little bit later, and then they made these changes. Because, like, Finn gets struck. In the book, he gets struck from up front.
Yeah.
Gets cut across the chest. Where in the, you know, the show, he gets cut from the back. And they've had a couple different things like that so far. But it's getting to that point where, yeah, you know, they're going to flat out say, yeah, well, of course the films are going to always trump your books. And, of course, your books are going to probably trump your comics. And, I mean, eventually we are definitely going to have a tier system. They're just, in my mind, they're not going to say that right now. It's that whole thing like Leland Chee back before Disney bought it, where he's like, as long as I'm in charge, there will always be one canon. Like, dude, there was two canons back then. You guys just didn't call it Legends at the time. You had all the fandom was at war over whether or not it was legit canon or an official canon or if it was canon at all. Well, everybody over at the Del Rey side was like, it's official canon. Sue Rustoni, Leland Chee, it's official canon. It's all one. How does Clone Wars fit? We'll tell you when we get there. Oh, well, Disney bought it. We don't have to tell you anymore. It's Legends now. This is canon. Yeah,
and how many times
it's happen, man.
How many times has he had to pull out to Nate to go, hey, Nate, is this right? Is this in the right timeline? And even Nate's gone, you guys paying me for this? What's going on? You know, like,
right?
I know, right? You know, they reach out to fans. I don't know how many times. I mean, look, granted, they're employees. They're probably not fans sometimes, some of them that work for it. It's a job, you know. But I think at the end of the day, what's interesting is that somebody has put so much passion into the timeline, especially the time and gold, like Nate has just nailed it. I mean, I don't know how many of us have gone out there and gone, where does this fit? And then we go in and have a look, and it's just so well orchestrated. Hats off to Nate, mate. I tell you what, bloody awesome.
I couldn't do it. Hey, can you imagine being like the one person working at Lucasfilm that's just, I don't like Star Wars, I've never even watched it. And they're like, how do you have this job? I'm really good at this one kind of model building.
I love Star Trek. Star Trek's the greatest. Oh, hi, Star Wars.
Right. Everybody's like, oh, here comes Bill. Hi, Bill. Bill hates it. He's a big, big Doctor Who fan. He don't care about anything but Doctor Who.
Hey, how you doing? This is Doctor Who. I'm here now. All right, these episodes are going to be 2 minutes long because I am Arnold and I will kill the master. Come on now.
well played.
Oh, nice. But I think the biggest thing is before we wrap up today, have a look at the trailer, what your thoughts are. This has come out, and, you know, look, I think it's a bit of a celebration of what these guys have put together, obviously. This team, JJ, then Ryan, and now JJ is back. And JJ's got a real, I think, hard job. You know, he's wrapping up not only... is he wrapping up this trilogy, but he's got the tough task of doing it for three trilogies. Not only that, but every other story that's come through past. Do you think he's ready?
I think he is. I think the one thing he gets the most flack for when it comes to The Force Awakens is it being too much like A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a legitimate criticism, but at the same time, I think that's a tribute to what he was sent to do with that film. You know, he was sent to recapture that, and I think he did. And he has mentioned time and time again the fact that he's very aware of that he's not wrapping up just one trilogy, but three of them. And, you know, how do we do that? Plus, how do we work with the footage that we have of Carrie Fisher to make General Leia the princess that we all love so much and do her the honor? You know, he's been very aware of so many things. Now, while I may feel like they should have also used some CGI and some other stuff, they've been so aware of that, and then they felt so incredibly blessed by the footage that they have that they felt that they pulled it off, which tells me that he had a plan, and what they were able to find in the archive footage was more than enough to suit the needs of that plan. What I look forward to the most is I have a feeling this is going to be a long film, and not in the run of minutes, but like how certain books take, you know, like Master and Apprentice, right? It's over a span of, say, like a month. Mm-hmm. Some are a 5-year book, you know. You get mm-hmm. to Rebel Rising, and that's the, you know, you see Jin go from age 3 to the age she is at the beginning of that. I'm anticipating something like that. We're going to have a jump forward in time, but I also feel like we're going to see the story progress also. Like, there'll be months between some scenes and stuff, and we'll see a jump in time. Or the jump in time is going to be so far forward that that allows for a lot of the story to be told in either prose or in backstory or just a quick reference to events in that form or fashion. And they can allow the prose to come back and fill that in later. Because of the fact that there's just so much, and the fact that he is focused on those 3 trilogies, and that means there's so many more characters than what we have just in this one trilogy to bring forward, which kind of makes sense then why you would hear Palpatine laughing here at the end, because, I mean, who's one of the major characters of the first 6 films? Well, it's all about Palpatine rising to power and Palpatine's fall. You know, and one of the big themes of Legends was Palpatine coming back from the dead. You know, we saw that hinted at with the whole Plagueis learn the trick, you know, it's a trick that my master learned. So to see that, you know, it also touches on the whole Dark Empire. I mean, you know, we saw that happen. Mm-hmm. That was what happened when he died at Endor. The spirit of Palpatine went out and found one of the first hands that he could get close to. Yep. I think it was like Asriel or something like that, and then traveled from that body in Asriel all the way back to Biss, where he had the other clones, and then he dumped in there. I mean, that was always the story I was hoping for in Legends. You know, we knew that Palpatine was using clones. We knew that he had cloned Jorah Sabaoth, and we knew that that didn't go well. And it was always like, you know, at what point did Palpatine leave his body and start using the clone bodies? Because it was always hinted at that the clone bodies, or at least his mastership of the dark side, was so much that it ate up the clones, or that the clones were imperfect enough that they couldn't contain the power, and that that was part of why he looked so wrinkly, was that the power of the dark side was eating him alive from the inside. So it was always that question of, well, when did he start doing it? You know, like, I kept waiting for during the Force Unleashed to find out that Galen was actually a clone of Palpatine. Like, that was the clone process. They were trying to perfect the clones for Palpatine. Mm. And then once he had the perfect way of cloning the body, he was just going to take over the body. But they didn't go that route. But I kept waiting for that, man. Like, that would have been a great moment. So when they have him laughing, like, my brain just immediately blew up. And I started thinking about all the possibilities. You know, I mean, we don't have Force ghosts that are dark side spirits, but we do. You know, you go to Dathomir and you see them. They're trapped on you know, the grounds, basically, that the Night Sisters lived in. You have Mommen from the Darth Vader comic, where he's trapped in the mask, basically. You know, and that was always how it was in Legends. They were trapped in places. There was never a Force ghost that really could roam around. I think the closest we got to that was Revan, when they had that whole, you know, out of body thing where there's 2 Revans, his dark and his light side were split, which would be another killer story to get. But yeah, when I heard him laughing, we see the Death Star, I immediately was thinking, like, okay, he's got to be trapped in there. You know, like, that's now basically the urn for Palpatine. And whatever they got to go in there, if they're going inside there to get something, like, oh my God, could you just imagine that being like a ride at some place, like Knott's Berry Farm, where they got the, you know, escape from Endor, the Death Star experience?
You can just imagine, you know, Finn, Rey, and Poe, they're climbing, you know, out of a boat into the wreckage of the Death Star, and they just see this crummy old dude with a, you know, overcoat, probably got a little bit of wind cheater and a hoodie, and he's just got a fishing rod. I caught another one.
Well, see, and then if we're talking Force possessions and stuff, I mean, imagine if Poe or Finn gets taken over.
Ooh,
you know, like, yes. I mean, what'd that do for Rey? Especially if it was like Finn or something, you know, someone she's pretty close to, where she's got a question, do I take out this guy? Or, you know, like, or if it's Poe and he's got Finn, like, under the knife, like, does she take Poe out? Like, there's so many possibilities with the teaser. And then I keep going back to, well, episode 1 teaser had that great scene of the Gungans on their little EOPs coming out of the fog with the little feathers and wow, wow, wow. That didgeridoo sound that they had going and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, that battle's going to be so awesome. Right? Yep. And then that moment happened in the movie and I was just like, what? That was it? Like, wow. It was like the Battle of Winterfell and everyone's going, it's too dark. I can't see. I was like, where's my battle? There's supposed to be a battle happening here.
I remember seeing something about that. I was talking to a couple of pals at work, and they're have you seen the Winterfell episode where they got the battle happening? I said, yeah. I couldn't see a damn thing, Dan. What do you mean? Oh, well, you know, it was just, I turn up the contrast and the brightness on my TV. No matter what I did, I just couldn't get a picture. I said, so you didn't see the armies of the Night King, yeah? No, I couldn't see nothing. I said, you know, I think at the end of the day, they really, you know, again, another thing, Battle is Chaos. I loved that.
Right?
Yeah, that's what it should be. I mean, look, not everything's going to be as clear-cut and as pastel-coloured as Star Wars, which is, you know, very clear, you know, and everything is pulled back quite well. It's not Christopher Nolan and Batman Begins where he goes, I want to see the fight dirty, you know, I want to see it, you know, really close. And so all you see is fists and legs going past because apparently Bale was shown some type of fighting in that was, yeah, it's grubby, it's grounded, but we don't get to see it because he's going, I just want to see the arms moving.
Right.
And then they learnt that on the second one. They said, Chris, we need to see the actual action. Oh, okay, I'll pull back the camera now, you know. And, of course, we got one of probably the greatest comic book movies ever, The Dark Knight. Sorry, Marvel, but it is better than all of your films. It really is. Want to see my scars? Yeah, it is brilliant. I can't wait for episode 9 and just to see that you can see the sheer excitement they all have about this. I mean, you've had Force Awakens, which in ways is an homage to what's come before, introduced us to new characters. Ryan's come along and by rights given us a very challenging film, which most second films are. Empire Strikes Back certainly was. Attack of the Clones? But you know, I think at the end of the day, we're in for something very exciting, so I can't wait. But where can the folks, find the same feel? Is it in The Mandalorian? Where are they going to find this?
Oh man, which one are you talking? More the Game of Thrones type of feel?
I think you know, like we're wrapping up a series of films here. Obviously, they're taking a break. But do you think Mandalorian is going to be what people are going to be driving towards? I mean, we got Star Wars Resistance.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, no. So, I think Resistance is going to stand on its own for a little while. I think that they need to really start stepping past where they've been in the first two seasons to really capture the rest of the fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that loosely because I haven't watched a lot of it yet. I've only seen a couple episodes, but from what I've seen, it hasn't been enough to really pull me in for it so far. Whereas the thought of what's going on with The Mandalorian. There's so much promise there of what could be, you know, what they could do. You know, if you could bring in, you know, the rumor or the legend of Boba Fett, you could bring Boba Fett in and find out, you know, he did actually escape the Sarlacc pit some form or fashion. Mm-hmm. Find out a leg. but I think, you know, when you got that, you've got so much potential because that's a theme of not just Rebels, but of Legends. You know, Legends had three major factors. You had the Jedi, the Sith, and the Mandalorians. Granted, by the time A New Hope came out, the Mandalorian faction was decimated. There was just Boba Fett, as far as we knew, right?
Yeah.
So they didn't play much of a role, but as we went back into the prequel trilogy, as we went back into the Old Republic, they did have a bigger role in things. So now we've got that aspect, and then what do we get in Clone Wars and Rebels? We get a lot more Mandalorians, so they're definitely playing in more. So they've also existed farther. In fact, they've existed more than the Jedi. There are more Mandalorians out there than there are Jedi, which is kind of a bummer. But but I think that, again, that's something that they're going to be able to explore, because even though the Clone Wars and Rebels didn't take a lot of what Karen Travis did for the Mandalorians, right? You think about what she did for the Mandalorians and what the Mandalorian mercs have done for the Mandalorians in the real world side of things. You know, like she helped flesh out a culture. You know, she fleshed out a language for them and all this kind of stuff. And if you take some of those elements and bring them in, the cherry picking that canon has always done with the EU, you know, you bring that kind of stuff in, there is so much there just before we get what we got in the Clone Wars and Rebels, which is a lot. I mean, they gave us a lot of those. You take those things and you combine them together, that you can really create a universe that feels as in-depth as what we're going to get with Galaxy's Edge. And I think that depending on where the story goes with The Mandalorian, I think The Mandalorian could easily be a show that people are flocking to like they are Game of Thrones right now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think that's it. There's just so much they can – I mean, you got to think about it. There was so much going into – these streaming services, not just from Star Wars base. I mean, you've got things like the UK, they've got Mega City 1, which was going ahead. It's just been, unfortunately, folks, they've dropped it. It's not going to happen now, which is really, really sad. But I'm hoping that this maybe gets them to green light another Carl Urban Dread, which is one of the best comic adaptations that's been done in the last 10 years. You know, I don't think it's talked about enough. That's a great film. But also, Duncan Jones, David Bowie Jr., the one, the only director of Moon and director of Warcraft, is doing one on Rogue Trooper from 2000 AD. Now, this is little known elsewhere around the place, unless you're a reader of 2000 AD and obviously Judge Dredd. That was one of the great series that was in those multi-packs of comics. But with Duncan Jones behind an adaptation of this, is going to get some wacky sci-fi coming. It is gonna be wacky,
kind of like Tag and Binks, kind of wacky, or
just eccentric but action packed. Like they're tough characters. You know, it's Judge Dredd style, man. It's nice. Right out there, like Strontium Dog and all those. So, you know, if you guys in the US that probably haven't had 2000 AD as much, because it usually goes to the Commonwealth countries like Canada and Australia, etc., New Zealand, check them out because they're really good. And they come in those massive jumbo size. So we're talking about the size of a newspaper. And you go, oh, yeah, this is a fantastic comic. This is, oh, look, Judge Dredd. And Freeze, Shin, what are you doing? You know, like, and he's that huge lawgiver. You know, it'll have flame control. It'll have pacifier. You know, it goes rapid fire. You know, all that sort of stuff. It's brilliant. Check it out. But I must say, what you do need to check out is the Star Wars Report and, of course, Star Wars Beyond the Films, because this gentleman right here is part of one of the most exciting shows out there. Tell the folks at home how to catch on.
Well, you can catch all the Second Airborne shows at StarWarsReport.com, www.StarWarsReport.com. You can find great shows on there. Bookworms, they had their 100th episode at Celebration. They just celebrated their 100th episode. Wampa's Lair is on there. We've got Ion Cannon. We've got Cloud City Casino that my co-host Nathan does with Michael Morris. Padawan's Perspective, it's kind of been on a hiatus. You know, Barron does have a lot of stuff going on. Haven't had a chance to get back on that one, but that's one I used to do with my daughter and his son and him. We would talk about Rebels and stuff, and then we were hoping to get into Resistance, but big hiatus. So hopefully I'll be able to get that one going. I've talked to my wife off, or not my wife, my sister. Oh, my God, my daughter. Those other two things. We've talked to her a few times about maybe her and I just doing it for a little bit just to get done with the Rebels stuff and then seeing about picking up with Resistance and going on that. But, yeah, and you can find me on Illogical Rogue 2 on Twitter and out there on Facebook as myself, Mark Herleman. I think on Facebook I'm just Illogical Rogue. They wouldn't let me put the number 2 in. Something about character limits or something. They're vicious like that. But, yeah, I'm all over the web. I'm even on Instagram. Just drop me a line, say hi.
That's it. And go and check out the shows, folks, because I tell you what, I've been a big fan before even I was a podcaster. And, you know, I'd be sitting in there, whether it was working as a janitor or at uni or whatever it was. And it was, you know, after obviously reading each of the books, I'd always catch on to the interviews that were done on your show. And even interviews, one of the best ones, Karen Miller out there, you know, doing interviews years ago for the Clone Wars Gambit series. There you go.
Yeah.
From Australia, you know, and then that was a great series because we got to see also Bail Organa's friendship with Kenobi Groh. And yeah, just great work back then, pal. So, folks, go and check it out. This is Zanimo O'Brien, Phantom from Down Under, here from Quinlan's Canteen on the Gold Coast of Australia. Give you, may the Force be with you. And I believe it is almost May the 4th. So, may the 4th be with you.
This is Mark Herleman from the Star Wars Report, and you're listening to Fanthatrax Radio.
G'day, how you going? This is how you can catch me on the web. That's right, your host, Adam O'Brien, the Fantha from Down Under. You can catch it Obi Pop Culture on both Twitter and Instagram. You can also catch me on the one, the only, Fandom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet Podcast. But yeah, check out Fanthatrax itself. Check it out at fanthatrax.com. All your Star Wars news in one single file.